This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Hey, Gordon, how's it going?
Morning, Doc. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. All good.
Interesting week we had last week, with the Edelman Trust Barometer, which I think was a fascinating insight into a kind of a changing global zeitgeist. I found a lot of it was a wake-up call to me. I mean, I would not have predicted half those results. And I think we mentioned it, we've gone so far down the rabbit hole of our own focus on the world and in South Africa in particular, we've forgotten there's a bigger picture out there. Well, yeah. I certainly have anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, Gordon. And I think, again, short of summarizing a whole episode, and, if our listeners out there haven't listened to it, it's a great episode again. But, I mean, some of those things, the scary part is that loss of trust in government globally, and you made the point of some countries that you wouldn't have called, and secondly, media, and I think it's, and the interesting thing on the other side there is the most trusted body is your company.
Yep.
So yeah, again, and I made the point, or I think we both made the point at the end, is hopefully that wind of change now, that greater kindness, the greater empathy, the greater care that a lot of organizations were almost forced to do through COVID permeates their business and stays with it, that they don't suddenly revert, and I want to use the word in inverted commas, bad behavior. Yeah. Not everyone's bad. Yeah. And that there is a different balance. And we're going to touch on that today. We're going
to certainly touch on some of those. Key points are emerging again, which is always nice when you get a double lens, which comes up with similar conclusions, which is very intriguing.
Yeah. And so, I mean, just to that end, we're going to welcome our guest, Devashni. Hi, you and I have done some stuff in the past. Devashni Murugan is the head of marketing for Accenture into Africa. Devashni, thanks very much for your time and spending time with us. So we really appreciate it.
Thanks, Doc. Glad to be here. Excited. Looks like it's going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think we always say it, Gordon, that we have had fantastic guests, over 120 episodes, people with great insights, different insights. And again today, I'm sure it will be another fantastic show for you to share your experiences for a massive organization like Accenture across Africa. And I think straight into it, Devashni, just headline, top line, there are four divisions. What do you do from a marketing point of view, and do you work across all four divisions?
Yes. So it is incredibly exciting, incredibly busy. So Accenture is a professional services firm. And as you've mentioned, we've got four divisions. And my team and I work across all four of those divisions. But we are still a single brand. We have to go to market as Accenture. And that's a lot of my job. I've got to make sure that we go into the market, we are breaking down the silos, and we speak in with a single voice. And as you can imagine, Doc, a lot of what we do is pretty complex. And a lot of what I've got to do is simplify that for the market. We also work across various industries. So we take our services into industries, and then we've got the added complexity of being an international company.
Yeah, and I think, sorry, Gordon, just before, and sorry to interrupt you, I think thanks very much for that. And I think part of any marketer's job should be to take something that is complex, understand it firstly, and then simplify it for the market. And so often, sometimes that part, the simplicity doesn't always happen to the degree that it should do. And so the consumer then has to grapple and battle. And I heard an interesting phrase a while ago that a confused mind says no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So your job is to make sure that people aren't confused of your offer, because it's easier then to say no and to go to something else. But
absolutely. I mean, people, you know, if you don't feel confident in what you've just heard and you're confused by it, as opposed to taking time to try to unpack it, it's easier to say no.
Yeah.
And people generally follow the path of least resistance.
Yeah,
I mean, that's Festinger's theory of cognitive dissonance. You know, if I don't understand, and or even worse, it appears because of my misunderstanding to contradict my worldview, then it is far easier just to reject that and continue with my worldview. But I just want to take a step back, because for me, my exposure to Accenture over the years goes all the way back to when Accenture was a media auditing group, or the Accenture that I engaged with. And I'm going to say it without fear or favor, probably some of the most dull, disinteresting people I've ever met in my entire 45 years in advertising, because that's what auditors do. And I'm one, so I'm allowed to say that, because I do a lot of media auditing. But the journey from Bean Counter to this, you know, partnership with Droga5 is fascinating for me. And if you think about agencies over the years, I mean, you know, that kind of journey was always anchored in someone's name. So Ogilvy, Footcone Building, FCB, J. Walter Thompson. There was always a name which drove this kind of creative path. And in the same in South Africa, King James or whatever, it was always name driven. So it's intriguing that, you know, this is this gigantic new consultancy agency, whatever, you know, the term is you use, is driven off Accenture. So I mean, it's a brand journey which is extraordinary in its own right, even before we get into some of the detail
absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that you mention historical background we come from, but you know, the reality is the world is changing. And any organization, any human being has got to change with it. So we've had quite an interesting journey. I mean, as you can imagine, when the creatives walked in and those guys behind the technical software and all, you know, all of the very technical ways we approached problems, there was a little bit of, what could you say, you looked at this and you thought, oh my word, how do we come together? And interesting for me, a large part of it started happening a couple of years ago, where Accenture, you know, we went into digital very strongly, and these digital guys came with a different way of working, and it was quite uncomfortable for a little while. And then we found a new way, a new cultural way of defining ourselves, which is so important. So interestingly enough, what I'm wearing today, as you can see, jeans, tackies. A couple of years ago, I'd have never wore that to Accenture. I'd be dressed like you, Doug.
Yeah.
Suit.
Yeah. He's very conservative, very Doug. Conservative. Oh, I know. That's why I'm here.
I knew I was going to see someone from Accenture, so I dressed up today. I mean, you know, you never know.
But this is the reality.
Yeah.
The world has changed, and what's important is the different thinking that comes with those people. And, you know, you've got someone that's very rational, and you've got the creative mind. And when you bring those two minds together, or 10 minds together, whatever the case may be, the impact is astronomical.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
I mean, you know, even if you go back to my textbook, which I think the first edition came out, you know, in the 80s somewhere, I talked there about logical creativity. And it's a point that, you know, for me, has been forgotten. I think too many people view creative solutions in advertising to be some random event which occurs somewhere, you know, in an unknown universe. But the truth of it is if I sit and reflect on some of the best minds I've had the privilege of working with over the years, guys like Robin Putter, Robin Putter's reasoning power was extraordinary. And we could follow the reasoning journey up to a point, and I would continue along the reason path, his mind was just so wired to creative solutions that he would find the path less traveled by. And I think that's the magic of it. It's not creativity, it's not the absence of reason, it's the unique application of reason, which I think is the real magic.
Yeah. And you know, that's such an interesting point, because as you know, we've now acquired King James, and I've had the privilege of working with Alistair King. And as I watch him, he has got such a reasoned mind, but like you say, he goes along that path, and then he opens up this world that you're like, wow, how did all of that come together? He brings in that creativity. And for me, as a marketer, I often tell people, because they expect me to be the super creative person, and I'm not. I'm more of a reasoned, analytical person. But I do know a good idea when I see it. And I can follow that reason path.
And I think it's an interesting point that you make there, Vishnu, from the previous chat we had a few months ago, Gordon. We had Hayden Townsend from the interactive side of your business. And we spoke specifically, that was just as that King James acquisition was coming through. And we spoke two themes that came out of it. And again, for our listeners, you know, if you're interested, listen to this episode, but then also go back and find the one from Hayden Townsend. Hayden talks about using creativity to solve complex business problems.
Exactly.
And the second part of that discussion is around MarTech, but a real understanding. You know, in other words, not just having a CMO having a buzzword saying, you know, we're going to do MarTech, and there's a bit of the metaverse and Web3, and you know, anyone can get away with it. But the moment you start scratching a little bit deeper, you get found out. So that's a very interesting episode. And again, just to Alistair King, I met him a few weeks ago. I was in Cape Town on the same speaking bill, if you like. There was a conference and he was chatting just before I spent some time with him. So very interesting talking about that. And again, to our listeners out there, it'll be interesting to watch that journey, that merger between the King James creativity, some of the analytical, technical, operational strengths of Accenture. So yeah, I mean, well done on that. And obviously, you know, I wish you guys only the best going forward on that journey.
And Doc, you know, I just want to, you know, to touch on Hayden's point in terms of using creativity to solve critical and complex business problems. Often, you know, people have this very unilateral view of creativity, and they think about it in the context of advertising, and to be a good creative, you create a good ad. It's not that. It's about how you think, how you merge different parts of a challenge together, different parts of a solution together to come up with something unique. Unique and beautiful and exciting.
And I think, you know, the point you're making there, Devoshni, we've also touched on, and it's a universal issue around the role of marketing. You know, so often marketing as a discipline is marketing equals advertising.
Yes.
You know, and that's not correct, because you spoke now about the analytical side. So even creativity doesn't always just equal advertising.
Yes.
Creativity equals advertising, creativity, problem solving, design
so
thinking,
many elements.
A web diagram, spider diagram, a Venn diagram. There's lots of things that can come out of a word. It's the application and how you guide the particular audience around using that. So yeah, absolutely. And I think it's such an important point for marketers out there to just take off those blinkers, you know, to start thinking naturally and saying the world of marketing is as wide as you want it to be. In fact, marketing equals business, not advertising. You know what I mean? That's I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, but there are complications though on in the creative universe at the moment. So in the past, you could come up with a great creative idea, and even if you had fired the warning shots, you know, which were, you know, this is going to upset somebody out there. Upsetting people was a bonus. You know, that's what you did. You know, you got in people's face.
That's why, for me, diversity of thought is so important in a room. You know, what I value in my team is actually when we don't agree with each other, when we have different ways of looking at a campaign, at something we want to take out to market. Because what is you know, run of the mill for me, and it wouldn't even ruffle a feather, might have completely different consequences for someone else. In fact, often at Accenture, a few years ago, I used to do, you know, our induction, and we used to talk about social media. And I used to say to the guys that were coming in, we want you to be out on social media. We want you to express yourself. but you've got to do it within, you know, you've got to apply reason. Mm. If it's not something you would say to a person,
yeah.
it's not something you want to be saying on social media.
Mm.
But also, if you're uncertain, don't ask the person that's most like you.
Ask
someone who's got a completely different background. Someone you probably wouldn't even speak to. Maybe that person makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Ask them, what do they think of your post?
Yeah.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
No, and you're 100% right. And I think, you know, I guess one of the benefits of living in a very complex society like South Africa
mm-hmm.
is we grow up and we're growing up with this
mm-hmm.
notion of understanding, deep understanding of differences of people and then looking for those non-obvious similarities, you know, as opposed to the obvious difference, you know. I mean, the most obvious thing you see is gender, race, and then you start getting into the things that are, you know, and age, I guess. And then the things that are non-obvious, you know, you don't know what you share in common with that person. And often it's those, you know, we've chatted on the show before about those deep things around a very deep religious link, as an example, that the person doesn't display overtly. But once you get into that, you find you have a very deep connection with somebody that on the surface
mm-hmm.
is naught for three.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's, and I think you make a very good point there from a marketing point of view. Devoshni, just looking a little bit on in terms of one of the big pieces of work that has come out of Accenture of late is the Fjord Report 2022. It's got five trends. Let's just, and again, we don't have the time to unpack each of them. And again, for our listeners out there, please go onto the site. The whole report is there as well as the exec summary. Pull it down. It makes for fascinating reading in terms of the world we're living in and the world of tomorrow. So let's just look at a few of those. I mean, the first one is come as you are, you know, and that's talking about people having a different view of the world
mm-hmm.
now. I guess the 2 years, people are reassessing their values, and you spoke about, you know, just a thing, and I want to say a simple thing. It's not really a simple thing like a dress code, because
mm-hmm.
it speaks a lot about the organization. So let's just talk a little bit about your notion and what you've seen in your workplaces, come as you are, how the differences are manifesting themselves.
Well, you know, the last 2 years have given us as individuals the unique opportunity to get to know ourselves better, you know, and also look at what we enjoy doing. And a lot of people have come up with what we call the side hustle.
Mm.
And so, you know, we as organizations, we as individuals have to look at what different people are bringing in terms of what they want to do, what brings them joy.
Yeah.
You know, the world of work is no longer as simple as you show up at work from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, you do your job, and then it's over.
Mm.
These worlds have integrated.
Yeah.
And those side hustles, those things that people love, those hobbies, all of that comes to the fore. I mean, and that's one way of looking at come as you are. And like you said, there's so many other ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I no longer, talking about the dress code, often when I sit with my CEO, this is exactly how I'm dressed when I see him.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, that would have been completely taboo.
Yeah, look, I mean, come as you are. I mean, there's always a balance, you know. If I'm reflecting back to, you know, the early days of advertising, or my early days in advertising in the 70s, there was a large measure of come as what you want to be
mm-hmm.
at some point, you know. I mean, you were kind of projecting yourself into a role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one has to be cautious. Whilst I love the integrity of come as you are,
mm-hmm.
there must be an element of come as you want to be, or come as you think your client would like you to be. So at the end of the day, I mean, to a large degree in advertising, we role play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm capable of role playing. I think that's a skill set which is not taught enough, or which is not encouraged enough. So, you know, I don't think my clients, if I'm, you know, we talked about it earlier. I mean, if I was pitching on a bank, I would go dressed appropriately for that occasion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pitch up at the bank in my slops and T-shirt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. In fact, I went to Cape Town to pitch on a tech business just before lockdown.
Mm.
And I dressed pretty groovy. I thought I had my jeans and my T-shirt. Mm. And all the Cape Town guys were laughing at me. He's like, where's your shorts? Why did you dress up? You know? So there's a rhythm to it all. But come as you are. I love the integrity of it. But yeah, we've got to learn to role play as well.
No, and I think that's such an important point, because, and especially for our youngsters out there, leaving universities, you know, coming into the workplace, that idea of where do you want to be and how do you project yourself? Because that's going to be helpful in terms of you getting there. Mm. So I think absolutely there's got to be a balance to this.
Yeah. And I think, and again, you know, we can continue because it's such, there are such interesting points that we're making and life points, I'd like to think, and skills that people can take. The second point out of that report is the end of abundance thinking. In other words, you know, this whole consumption pattern people have looked at and said, well, do I really need it? Am I buying differently? And what is the right thing for me to do, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you have a view on that.
I think it's absolutely critical. It's critical because, you know, overconsumption and unnecessary consumption has had such a negative impact on our environment. You know, we've got to be thinking more holistically in terms of what I do has an impact on my neighbor, has an impact on people I work with, has an impact on my community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at one point it was just about acquisition, getting more things, getting the latest. But I think we actually, that for me, and this is a personal perspective, is a very dangerous road to be on because you're never going to have enough.
Yeah.
So I actually, this particular point from the Fewer Trends really resonates with me personally because as individuals, as consumers, what we buy, what we use, we must think about what's the impact of that.
Yeah.
Personally, I must tell you, I'm one of those people who will really consider, do I need a new dinner service?
Yeah.
You know, new plates and cups when I've already got something that works and people can eat in it.
Yeah.
Whereas my mum, from a different generation, had a special service for when guests came, a special service for this. And it's too much. In fact, I was saying to my husband the other day, it's so unfortunate that my mum did so much shopping. Because I can't buy anything.
Well, just an aside though, Gordon, as a Devotion and I were on a call a few weeks or a few months ago on a totally different matter. And like we all do, you know, you order from various services. And so 60-60 from Checkers had arrived. And the problem is she was saying, just can you excuse me? Like, again, you know, Zoom and, you know, we've all done it. Please, I just got to sort this out. And so she goes there and she says, oh, no, man, it's got a problem. The guy's doubled up on my order. So I said, no, well, if you, I'm going to phone up Neil Schroeder at Checkers and say, you got a new service, Checkers 120, 120. So, yeah, but as you say, you know, sometimes you do look at it and say, you know, do I really need it? And I think that's a healthy way to look at things, you know,
absolutely.
Gordon.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is the part of the collapse of the concept of the nuclear family, two adults, two children, which is a nice idea for sustainability. But if you, the four of you, consume, you know, 20 times the amount that you actually require, you're no better off. You might as well have 20 children, you know. I mean, so I think overconsumption is really an issue. Intriguingly, on the 60-60 thing, I'm quite enjoying the current campaign, looping back to the past with Rion Kraveaken reading the news saying it's now been officially reported that 60-60 is cheaper than driving to your... to your local store. So it was quite an amusing loop back into the past. I mean, I can't remember when last I heard Kraveaken's voice on radio. I almost had to stop and retune for a moment. But nice campaign. Well done, guys. I think it's an intriguing little insight into that 60-60 business, which is already front running in so many spaces. Yeah.
Speaking of frontiers, though, I mean, one of the big things, and I don't want to say the biggest thing, but certainly a big thing is the whole metaverse. And that's come out of the Fjords trends as well, understanding where your customers are, the whole new marketing marketplace. So what's your view on, just a quick one-liner on the metaverse?
So, you know, Doc, for me, I am so grateful that I am a marketer in this day and age. Because it's like standing on the precipice of a new frontier. I cannot wait to see what we're going to do in this new world. And we have already started thinking about how we use the metaverse in our execution of campaigns, in our execution of client events. You know, there's so much potential. And there's so much fun.
Yeah,
I mean, I love looking at the different avatars that are coming through. So incredibly excited. And I think that this is, it's a landmark moment.
Yeah.
And I'm incredibly excited to be able to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think it is. And yeah, and again, I'm not a, certainly no expert in it. And I've scratched the surface a little bit. But I mean, it's almost that blurring of so many layers, one of which is high definition gaming. You know what I mean? So you look at the world, and again, I'm not a computer gamer, you know. Gordon, we used to play pinball at the corner shop, you know, and Asteroids. That's giving away my age. You know, we had that was black and white screen Asteroids. But I mean, the point of the story is we've been around enough younger people who are and have played high definition computer games. So it'll be interesting to see that flock of marketers coming in with already that predisposition. They already understand avatars, they understand graphics, they understand, you know, first person views and all kinds of stuff. And all you now overlay, I say all you do, it's a lot, is the marketing part of it. And then the real estate, the selling. And I've seen some of those prices already of selling of real estate in the metaverse.
Yeah, well, I mean, the metaverse, obviously, one will now have to acquire some Zuck Bucks. I'm following the Zuck Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
This is the new currency that Mr. Zuckerberg has invented. We'll see how far he gets with the Zuck Bucks, because his other currency, I think, bombed out. What was his other proposed currency?
Whatever.
But yeah, no, coming back to the pinball, I'm afraid, Doc, I was a bit of a porker back in the day, so I managed to tilt. The guys
don't
always
tilt, to tilt. Don't tilt the machine.
I just had to lean on the machine.
The machine's got no idea what we're talking about.
I am so lost.
You don't understand. You see, this is a different generation. The nice thing about our show, there's a little bit for every generation in the show. Now, a pinball machine was a machine that sat in invariably the corner cafe with a little silver ball that went around and bounced around a few pieces of elastic and at an angle, and obviously the ball would come down. Now, to stop the ball, you would push the machine or you'd lift it slightly and try to guide it, and invariably the shop owner would shout across the counter, don't the machine.
Yeah. And there were no cryptocurrencies. So you had to put real money in tickies and so 5 cent pieces.
Yeah. So for our younger listeners out there, that's a quick lesson in pinball. But I mean, back to the last two trends, and I'm also cognizant of the time. We're having such a great chat.
Yes.
The fourth one is, this much is true. People are now saying, well, I don't know. Is it true? Do I trust you? You know, there's a large degree, and Gordon, we spoke about the Edelman Trust Report. People are saying, how do I know that? So I don't know if you have a view in terms of people questioning the answers.
It is. I think it's so important for people to do. I'm one of those that, you know, before, I do recall when I first started working, and the first time someone gave me a contract to sign a medical aid insurance, I didn't even read it.
Yeah.
I said, where do I sign? I was so, and people were like that. They were so open. But over the years, we have learned that you cannot take things for granted. Whatever it is. I mean, there's been the whole issue of fake news. So many, and I think it's best for people to question. It's best to be a critical thinker.
Mm.
And it helps us be better. Be better human beings, be better corporates, and think about each other.
Yeah.
Very important.
It's a healthy development. I mean, I think, you know, I have the privilege, obviously, of having grandchildren or watching a generation of my kids and my friends' kids raising children. And I think they're better parents because they, you know, I was not encouraged by my father to ask too many questions. Too many questions, they get a clip around the ear.
Mm.
So, you know, we need to encourage kids to say it is okay to question. Yes, we can have rules about the manner in which you question, what is a polite question, what is not a polite question, etc. But the principle should never, never be forgotten. And I think we need to instill that in the next generation of South Africans. If we look at the threat to our democracy, if we have a generation of young people who feel that they're not allowed to question or they shouldn't question or they don't know how to question, then we've got problems on our hands. So I think it's a really important initiative. And that goes for advertising as well. I should be able to question the content of an advertising. In the old days of, you know, in media, these are my principles and, you know, if you don't like them, I've got others. That's gone. You can't think like that anymore.
And, you know, questioning doesn't mean disrespect.
Yeah, exactly.
It means about getting to a common place of understanding.
Mm.
And I think that's absolutely critically important. Especially, I mean, talking as a mother, I've got two young boys, and I want them to question me respectfully, but I want us to have conversations.
Mm-hmm. But it's the culture you create. And I think you made the point earlier around an organizational culture. And again, you know, some organizations still today do not have a questioning culture. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still very much a hierarchical, this is how it is. Now, yes. You made the point earlier that people are changing, individuals are changing. And I think COVID is a catalyst, but I think it's been coming for a while. Mm-hmm. There are different generations of people coming through the system. But organizations themselves also need to create that culture where you need, much like you as a mother and as a family unit, there's no doubt you at some stage have to or have told your children, it's okay to, you've got a dialogue, it's okay to question. This mm-hmm. is how we can question. This is why we can question. These are the kind of outcomes, you know. So you've got to create that safety net, because in the absence of that, you know, people don't know. And certainly in organizations, you know, and I've worked in some great and some shocking organizations mm-hmm. where you certainly questioning is not on the agenda. You know, it's, we used to joke about the buy-in principle. You know, mm-hmm. I tell you and you buy in, you yes. know, and that's obviously not the way it should be, but yeah. Just time-wise, the last one, and I think we touched on it a little bit already, on the Field Report is handle with care. So mm-hmm. in other words, the rise of kindness, more EQ in businesses, understanding people. You got a view on that from your experience?
For me, again, super, super important. And I actually think these two trends play off each other.
Yeah.
You know, because as you question, you know, there's an understanding that's built. Mm. And you get a sense of what people want and don't want. I think it's absolutely critical. The one thing I am really, very, very positive about that has come out of this pandemic is us understanding the mental health of our people. Mm. And at Accenture, we spend a lot of time, particularly, I can say absolutely for my team, understanding where people are at.
Yeah.
What are you feeling? Mm. And there was a time in business where you could never yeah. discuss that. Mm. But I find it so important. Mm. And personally, as an individual, I do so much better
yeah.
when someone asks me, mm. how are you doing? Can yeah. I help you with that? Yeah. You know what? You've had a tough day as a mom. Take some time out. Mm. We'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
We can do this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you have to go beyond the posturing. It's literally got to become a point where I can acknowledge that I'm struggling without having... Mm. loss of face. If exactly. my boss asked me, you know, 30 years ago, how are you doing? I would never have said I'm struggling, because yeah. in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, that's a losing statement. So mm. not mm-hmm. fit for management. So I was like, bring me more. No, it's fine. Just load me up, you know, yeah. and we mm-hmm. punished ourselves. But I think it's a very healthy kind of regard for the value of people in the business. And I think as the industry, we kind of lost sight of people for a while. So I'm thrilled to hear this narrative playing mm-hmm. back in again.
And the truth is, we know we're without yeah. our people.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, the crazy part, of course, every organization says, you know, at the reception, you know, there's always like a heart or some symbol. Our customers are at the heart of our business and yeah. we love our employees. Well, most companies yeah. do that. But I mean, you know, when rubber hits the road, sometimes, you know, it's not always the case. And just an interesting aside, I mean, one of the very interesting points I came across a guy, Professor Andy Andrews. Andy was head of Wits Business School lately, Henley. He did a lot of work with us. And Andy often said to us, he said, if you want to see the importance people place on their business, just ask them for a set of minutes, management or board minutes, and see where things stack up. Invariably, it'll be the chairman's address and finance first up, and then there'll be maybe sales or strategy, and always last will be HR, guaranteed, fact. And he said, so how then did you guys say your people are the most important when it's the 15th item on the agenda, and after item mm-hmm. 8, people are already tired and checking exhausted. Out? And that's how, and that's just an interesting little observation. And he often said, but show me the company that puts it right up front. And why don't they? Why don't they discuss it? Because mm-hmm. everyone wants to discuss the numbers. And the irony of the income statement, all it does is it tells you what the weather did yesterday. It yeah. doesn't give you a forecast of the future. It's just a report of yesterday. So anyway, but besides that, we're running out of time, Gordon. We're having yep. such fun here. Devoshni, one last question from my side, and then I'll leave it to Gordon. Your career path and your lessons that you have for younger listeners out there. You told us off air you started as an academic, and today you're running the marketing for Accenture Africa. Just take us through that path. It sounds like it's a very interesting journey.
You know, Doc, it was an interesting journey, and there were ups and downs. But to your point, I started off lecturing marketing at Wits University, and then I realized I didn't have enough world experience. So that's what made me leave. But I loved the thinking that happens in research and academia. From there, I actually had quite a number of years of questioning myself because I didn't fit the normal mold of let me become an assistant brand manager, marketing manager, category director. And I used to beat myself up thinking, oh my God, I'm never going to have the career I want to have because I've taken, you know, these lateral moves. I've worked in different industries. But actually now today, as I sit in this role, I'm so grateful that I had those experiences, that I was exposed to so many different parts of marketing because it helps me be more critical in what I do on a daily basis. So I think to the youngsters out there, don't be afraid to take chances and don't feel like you've got to follow a particular path. Take every opportunity and put your all into it and take the learnings. That's very important. Take what you learn from there and look at how you can translate that elsewhere.
It's a great way to sum it up and a great place, I think, to leave off. So to the young people out there, and coming back very quickly to the marketing awards, again, just to appeal to the young people, we know last year we were both a little disappointed that there wasn't enough buy-in from young people for young emerging marketers who were about to make a name for themselves. So to those guys, you know, take the advice today. Don't be afraid. What can possibly happen? Throw your hat into the ring and put your names forward. And the worst that can happen is you don't win the award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you won't know until you've tried.
You won't know until you've tried, yeah.
And I think and we made that point last year. So again, Divisional, you and I are involved with the Marketing Achievement Awards, Accenture's the headline category sponsor of Organization of the Year. So again, you know, we don't unfortunately have much time to discuss that now, but I mean, that's going to be an interesting thing. And I mean, that'll be very interesting. But to young marketers out there, Divisional, in closing, thanks very much for your time. We really appreciate it. It was a fascinating chat. Again, the Fjord Report on the Accenture main site. Download it and read it. It's very interesting. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And to all the listeners out there, let's keep talking.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mateus. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.